Hi, I'm Isabel and I'm an addict.
Hi, Isabel.
Can you hear me all right at the back? Yeah? Oh, good. Or maybe not so good, I don't know. Where to start? I probably best start when I first came into the rooms. I first came into the rooms when I was 18, and I'd been using smack for 5 years. And like the last speaker said, I wasn't very good at using, I mean, I think in general. I used to OD a lot, so I often ended up in casualty. Nobody very much wanted to use with me as a result. It was a long time ago, so it was days before mobile phones. So I spent a lot of time being incredibly miserable, having to ring in call boxes and hanging around. I mean, it was a very different world to the world that it is now, where you can kind of order it online and it's all very kind of easy. It was really tough in my day, back in the day. And, you know, it was chaotic, my using. And there were lots of war stories, but it was mostly pretty boring. I spent a lot of time sort of gouged out on the sofa, not really doing anything very much. So in between the sort of dramas and the daily sort of hassling to school, there was, you know, loads and loads and loads of time that was incredibly dull. And I had a car accident, and I ended up in a coma. And that really wasn't the sort of moment where I thought, God, I've got to do something about it. But others thought that this might be a moment where I might want to do something about it. And I was taken to my first meeting. And in those days, there were only, I think, 4 meetings in London or 5 meetings in London. And I went to this meeting and I didn't really identify with anything very much, apart from 2 things. The girl who was doing the chair, who I identify with, I mean, I know her now, and I identify with loads of things with her. But at the time, the only 2 things I identified with were, one, that she hated Christmas, and it was coming up to Christmas, and 2, that she'd had anorexia. Those were the only things. And I knew somebody at the meeting, and we took the pot, and we went off and scored. And I thought, well, that slightly proves the point that probably these people aren't really clean after all, and it's really nothing. You know, I was very sort of unsure that people really were clean. I wasn't sure that I wanted to be clean. In fact, I was pretty sure I didn't want to be clean. Because, and most of the time, I think people found me particularly objectionable when I wasn't using. Because at least when I was using, when I was completely stoned, I was kind of quite calm, quite quiet, quite kind of out of it, and much easier to handle. When I didn't have drugs and was trying to get drugs, I was a complete pain in the backside. So I think that in general, we all believed that I was much better off completely out of it. Well, that's the way I sort of saw it. And I continued using. And people kept trying to persuade me to go to meetings. And finally, somebody said that they, you know, if I continued using, the next time I OD'd, they were going to drop me in treatment. And I was living in France at the time. So they drove me all the way to Weston-super-Mare and deposited me in a treatment center very soon after saying this, because, as I mentioned, I regularly OD'd. And I found myself in treatment, as I say, not really wanting to stop using. What I did want was a bit of a break. I definitely wanted sort of time out. I definitely knew that I was miserable. It felt as though nothing was really going to change. And yet, the first thing I did was I started talking about how wonderful using was. The first thing that happened, even as I was completely miserable, I talked about all the joys, all the good things that happened, and sort of, you know, endlessly had euphoric recall, and thought that really what I wanted to do was use. And they kept me in treatment for 10 months. And, you know, I could see that I was powerless, and I could see that I was unmanageable. But I think the two things that were difficult was I didn't really believe that I would get better if I stopped using. I still deep down thought that I used partly in order to make myself more manageable and to be able to cope with life and, you know, to medicate myself, basically, because I just wasn't designed to, you know, live clean. And I think the other thing was I thought that life was definitely going to be more boring if I didn't use. And I couldn't see that how boring my life was not using. I thought it was kind of quite exciting. And especially because I had some quite good war stories and, you know, they were quite funny in some ways, quite sad in others, actually, looking back on it. And people would come and, you know, there'd be family groups and friends would come and other people I knew and I used with would share. And we'd laugh at these stories that were quite kind of wacky and out there, but actually were really sad, rather hopeless, rather, yeah, had no hope to them at all. And I ended up, after 10 months in treatment, doing about a month back in London before I started using again. It was a month in which every day I wanted to use. Some of the time I think I wanted to die more than use, but wasn't really sort of focused on committing suicide. I was just miserable. And it sort of reinforced my view that life in recovery was just desperate. And I would go to meetings with and see people I knew and they go, how are things? And I go, oh God, they're awful. I hate it. You know, I'm so scared all the time. I can't talk to anybody. I can't share because I physically shake. I can't be near anybody who shares because I physically shake. I think people are looking at me. I can't get up and go to the loo when I want to in the meeting because I'm worried people are looking at me. I felt so self-conscious and so kind of fearful about absolutely everything. And I didn't know where I was going, what I was doing, what I wanted, or anything like that. And they'd say, oh God, I feel really frightened and I'm scared and I'm whatever. And then I'd see them chatting to people and I'd think, well, you know, it's different for me. I'm more sensitive than these other people. I'm different. Maybe I'm more than just an addict. You know, I kept clutching at reasons why it wasn't going to work for me. And the thing that I hadn't really focused on very much was that I still had a lot of baggage of the way that I thought about things. So I still had the view that it was so uncool to be keen. So I had to sit right at the back of the meeting. I thought, you know, people who talked about God, that was just deeply embarrassing and, you know, very uncool. And I was definitely not going to do all the things they were doing. I mean, 90 and 90, that was very keen. And I was definitely not doing that. And I would think, you know, these are the rules for other people and the rules for me will be different. And needless to say, I wasn't getting better, but other people were getting better. And I put it down to the fact, not that they were doing all the suggestions, but rather that they were sort of, you know, less complicated than me. And I started using again. I forgot to mention that, you know, because in treatment they said, don't go into any relationships. I ended up leaving treatment in a relationship. And so that was another reason why I couldn't really talk to people very honestly about things, even if I knew what being honest was. Partly because I knew that they'd say, well, if you're miserable, then you shouldn't be in a relationship. So I didn't feel that I could talk about that either. And I ended up using again. I went back into treatment. I did the whole thing again. I didn't learn anything from it. I just was quite good at doing treatment. And I quite liked treatment. I quite liked rules. And then you could rebel and it was all quite safe. But then I came out again and I used again inevitably because it was a bit this, you know, as the last speaker was talking about, I had some good intentions. You know, I was trying in my way, but I wasn't doing the suggestions. I was doing it my way. And I would get to a point where something tiny would go wrong, really nothing of any consequence, and I'd think, oh God, I've just got to go and use, you know, I'm just not meant to be clean. And I would find myself at the dealer before I'd even really consciously tried to do the thinking through or ring somebody or ask for help, didn't know how to ask for help. And I ended up using again after the second lot of treatment and ODing as usual. And when I ODed, I ended up in hospital. And from hospital, they transferred me to a section in a mental hospital in Elephant and Castle that I'd been in when I was much younger for anorexia. And when I was there, I just thought, God, I just don't seem to be able to use, and I don't seem to be able to stay clean. This is a complete nightmare. I don't know what to do. And after 28 days, when I got let out, I went to a meeting, and it was in Response Bookshop. I don't know if there's, I think there's still a meeting there. And it was in a circle, and everybody shared in the thing apart from me. And people kept laughing, which I thought was just, at the time, incredibly insensitive given the amount of pain I was in. They were just ignoring that. And we got to the sort of about 15 minutes before the end of the meeting, and everybody had shared. And so everybody was looking at me, and I was determined I wasn't going to share. And then the rather controllingly, the chairperson said, don't you want to share? So I just said, well, I've just come out of All Saints Hospital, and I don't know how to stay clean, and I don't know how to use. I'm rubbish at using. I keep ODing. I keep ending up in hospital or treatment or whatever. I'm in a mess, and I really don't know what to do anymore. And he came back in and said, that was the point that I started getting clean. And it always makes me feel quite emotional because actually that's what happened to me. The point at which I said, I don't know how to do it anymore. I need help. I'll just do what everybody else does, was the point that I got clean. And it was incredibly powerful. I did 90 and 90. I got a sponsor. I did lots of things wrong. I was still in a relationship. I did a whole lot of things wrong, but I kept going to meetings every day and not using a day at a time. Sometimes it was an hour at a time, sometimes it was longer, putting one foot in front of the other and talking to my sponsor. And within about less than a month, there was a point at which I suddenly realized during the middle of a day that I hadn't obsessed that day about wanting to use. And it felt like such a revelation. I was hardly aware of it. And then I suddenly thought, oh my God, I haven't kind of struggled not to use today. And that was huge for me. I was still self-conscious, but I didn't come to meetings to impress anybody. I didn't come to meetings to find friends. I didn't come to meetings to do anything other than get clean when I came back to meetings. I no longer cared about all those things. It wasn't that I didn't care what people thought of me, but actually it wasn't what I was doing there. And I think that was hugely helpful. I got a job. I was told when I was in treatment the first time for 10 months, I was in a halfway house for about 6 months of that. And they made me get a job. They made everybody get a job. And everybody went out and got a job. And I came back and said, sorry, I'm unemployable. I'm constitutionally unemployable. And they said, go and get a job. So I went back and I got a job. I was working as a waitress in the hotel in Weston-super-Mare doing breakfast. And I could get up every day and do that. And so when I got clean, they said, just go and get the most basic job. And so I was working in M&S, and I had a nylon uniform, and I used to say, you know, if I can't get humility in a nylon uniform, it's just not going to happen for me. But what was good was that I had to get up every day and do this job. And there were moments where I didn't want to get out of bed. And then I'd think, well, now I've got to ring somebody. And by the time I thought, oh, God, I've got to ring somebody to say I can't come in, it was kind of easier just to get up and go in. And by the time I was doing my job, actually, the day that I'd started off thinking I simply can't function, I can't do anything, I'm, you know, turned out to be okay. And a lot of the time, I don't think I really knew what I was feeling. I used to go and see a counselor once a week, on top of going to meetings every day. And sometimes the counselor would say, how have you been? And I'd say, dreadful, really dreadful, everything's terrible. And so he said, well, have you used? And I'd say, no, I haven't used. And he went, well, that's brilliant. I mean, you know, a few months ago, you simply couldn't stop using. You were endlessly ODing. You were endlessly in hospital. You know, this is fabulous. And what it turned out that happened was I'd have a bad feeling. The minute I had a bad feeling, that for me was like the day was over, everything was ruined, my life was at an end. I mean, I was a real sort of catastrophist. Everything, you know, small things would kind of be hopeless and awful, and there was no hope. And I would sail out of his office thinking actually things were fine, and having walked in and thought everything was dreadful. And I started getting much better at just doing the doing clean bit. I could start talking to people, like, you know, in meetings. I worked out how to share. I stopped shaking quite as much. And I found that as long as I did things repeatedly, I found that I could do them, which was really helpful. And I ended up changing jobs because I was encouraged by the boyfriend that I had when I got clean to get a job somewhere else, which I got. And I found that incredibly interesting. And I struggled with keeping things in proportion. I'm, you know, being an addict, I think like the last speaker was saying, you know, I found myself developing workaholism. I mean, that was extraordinary for me because I was so work shy. So suddenly being kind of quite workaholic was really odd. I really struggled with food. I struggled with trying to work out how to manage things in a sort of organized way and either get too fat or diet. And I was quite obsessive. But I found a way that worked for me, which was that I would just sit down and eat with a knife and fork with food on a plate and not go and have seconds. And that kind of worked for me. So it was just something that I worked out how to sort of try and keep things in proportion. And so I got better at practicing all these different things. And about 2 years on into recovery, I found that I could manage doing what I was doing, but I was in this relationship that was very difficult. And a lot of it, which I later came to see when I did a step four, was about the fact that I had always had the same relationships and I recreated them with different people endlessly. And they tended to be where I would hand over power to somebody and say, you tell me what to do, and tell me what to be, and what to say, and how to look, and whatever. And then I'd get fed up with it, and it would be really restrictive. And it was an imbalance of power, and it was very difficult. And people would, you know, I'd end up, even with really nice people, creating slightly abusive relationships where they were quite abusive. And I realized I couldn't stay in a relationship that was like that. And it was like that because of me, not because of this other person. And that I needed to be on my own in order to stay clean. And it was funny. It was a bit like finding things a bit at the end of recovery. It was at the end of using. It wasn't like my using was so dreadful at the end. It was grey. I felt at the time when I went into my first treatment centre that I was 18 years old, but actually going on 60. Life was completely grey. I felt like I'd done it all, I'd seen it all. You know, there was nothing more for life to give me, and it was just dire, and it was going to go on in this sort of grey, interminable way. And 2 years into recovery, I'd slightly done the same thing. I was overworking, I was in a relationship that wasn't straightforward, and I was taking very few new risks. All the new risks I'd taken were in the very, very beginning of my recovery, and then I kind of clung to them and didn't do anything new. And I realized that I was back there. And so I left the relationship I was in, and I started doing a few things new and trying to work out who I was and what I wanted. I was always quite clear about what I didn't want, but I wasn't very clear about what I wanted. And I dismissed so many things out of hand without even really trying them. And it seems mad to me now when I look back and I said, you know, when I looked at my life aged 18, I thought I'd done it all. I'd done nothing. You know, I hadn't had a job, I hadn't traveled very far, you know, because I always needed to be sort of somewhere near drugs. I did take huge risks by traveling with drugs. I didn't even think twice about it. It was so unthinkable for me to not have my gear with me. And I didn't really do very much. So the incredible thing was that when I started going and trying new things, I found so many things that I loved doing. And the one thing that sort of helped me, I think, in recovery is because there are so many things, they sort of create their own balance. So I exercise, I love riding horses, and I do Pilates and Zumba. I do enjoy my work, I love my work, and I do that. I do charitable things, I've got friends, I like going to art galleries, which I never really did before, and theatre and various things. I mean, none of this were things that I was really very focused on before. And I do so many of these things fairly obsessively, and there's only 24 hours a day and I've got to sleep for some of it, that actually, in a way, it kind of creates its own balance. But otherwise, one thing or two things would probably take over. I've been very lucky. I found somebody that I fell in love with. And I was about, 4 years clean. And it was the first time I'd ever fallen in love with anybody. And I hadn't even really fancied anybody. And I'd been in relationships before. But it was as though somebody would come along and say, you know, well, I like you. And I go, oh, okay, then, that's fine. And I'd find myself in a relationship until, you know, I'd realize that they were starting to tire of me. And then somebody else would say, you know, kind of, well, me Tarzan, you Jane. Oh, yeah, sure, fine. You know, and I'd end up with somebody else. I never really thought, do I want to be in this relationship? Do I want to be with this person? What is it I want? I would just kind of find myself bouncing from one thing to the next in this kind of rather hopeless way. And falling in love with somebody was incredibly painful, but great. And we did end up getting married, and we've been together ever since, and that's now, 28 years. And I've got children, and that was hugely, I mean, it's been wonderful, but also terrifying, and also very sort of emotional. I struggled when I very first had my my children, because suddenly it brought up lots of things that I hadn't really looked at before. I suddenly felt, if I feel so strongly and so much love for these children, why is it that my parents weren't that interested? Slightly different, because I'm number 5 of 6, so I think by then they got quite bored with the whole idea of having children, but they kept doing it nonetheless. So I think that was partly it. I don't think they hated me. And what I realized was also that I was trying to do my best, and I was making plenty of mistakes, and I love my children, and I was trying. And I could suddenly realize and start to forgive things that my parents did that I had felt were kind of unforgivable before. And that was very healing. I did a step four, which, I mean, I did all the steps, but I did a step four that was incredibly freeing for me. I'd done one in treatment and it was a bit kind of nothing. And I'd done one when I was a few years clean. And I suddenly could see the patterns of behavior, and they were my patterns. You know, they were things that I did in relationships with men, women, other people, you know, just with work, with other things. And I could see how useless they were at getting me any of the things that I really wanted or being helpful. And I could find out what were the things that just were, you know, were dead ends in a way, if you can see what I mean. You know, things that would end up driving me back to the same place that I'd been in when I was using, back to the same place, or feeling the same things I had when I was using. And I started realizing I really wanted to change. And I think until that point, there was part of me that thought I was really boring when I wasn't using, and that the only interesting thing about me was that I'd been a heroin addict from the age of 13 to 18, with slips until I was 20. And I thought that was the only thing. And so I still clung slightly to that identity. And what I realized when I did a step four was there was nothing more boring than my using, actually, and that it was a hiding to nothing, and that there was nothing for me in drugs. They're going to be there forever. They're always going to be dealers. They're always going to be drugs. And they've got nothing to offer me. And the one thing that I can do is I can make changes. I can live my life. I can have excitement. I can feel a lot of pain, which is the corollary of feeling a lot of happiness. I felt a lot of joy in recovery. Wonderful things have happened. There's no predictability to being clean. There's loads of predictability to using. I mean, as they say, jails, institutions, and death. And really, it really is that story. And I've seen it so many times since I've been in recovery with others. And I know it's no different for me if I go out there. And it's out there for me if I want it now. And I've had so many more interesting things happen to me. And I've discovered so many wonderful people, so many, you know, things that I enjoy doing. I'd hoped slightly that being clean would mean that I wouldn't have to feel, because I always thought it was very uncool to have feelings. And I think part of the reason that I took drugs was I was always very over-emotional. So I thought it would be quite useful to not have feelings. And what I realize is, I'm never going to be that person who's super cool and unfeeling. And B, actually, I don't really like people like that now. I thought I did, but I really don't like those people. I find them cold and kind of hard, and they're not the people I warm to. So I've been able to sort of accept that I'm just not that person. There are pretty much everything in my life has got better. Very little that hasn't. I can have days still where I'm very much sort of in old behavior. I can catastrophize so easily, especially over the little things. I'm really good with catastrophes. I'm rubbish with the small little things that go wrong. And quite often I still get that sort of, why me if I'm doing all the right things? Why should, you know, my roof leak, or why should something happen? You know, I suddenly feel that I'm above it all for no very good reason. But mostly recovery has been wonderful, and I've grown up in NA. It's taught me everything. I did gratitude lists, having been thought it so uncool to be clean. I started doing gratitude lists, and it was so useful, because I think I was automatically negative in my mindset. I always thought, you know, from a very young age, I thought it was very cool to sort of be gloomy. I wanted to die young. I thought that was very romantic. And I was heading in that direction. And I thought everything sort of black and whatever was great. And actually, I started turning it around by noticing how the positive, trying to focus on the positive. And then I realized it was actually much easier to go through life if you mostly focus on the positive. And every day, if I could focus on the fact that, you know, I wasn't using, I could focus on the fact that, you know, I had friends, I had people to ring up, people would ring me, people would rely on me. I mean, nobody had ever thought of relying on me before. But focusing on the things that I had, focusing on just, you know, before, I'd come from a background that was very privileged, and all I could see was how awful that was. When I came into the rooms, I thought it was really awful, because I thought it was kind of much worse. It was much easier to say life has dealt me a bad blow if you've got nothing. But if you've been given a lot of things, then people just think you're kind of moaning. But I was so miserable, and I couldn't see, you know, and I just sort of thought, well, it would have been much easier if I hadn't had this. I couldn't see what a positive it was. I mean, nothing positive could I see in any of the things I had. And I didn't look the way that I wanted to. Nothing about my life was okay. And when I started deciding that actually I was good enough, I was, you know, perhaps not brilliant, but I was intelligent enough. I was perhaps not very attractive, but, you know, I was attractive enough. I hadn't used sort of as long as some people, but actually I'd more than used enough. You know, everything was good enough to stay clean. And actually it turned out was good enough to have a very good recovery so far. And I'm really, really looking forward to what I hope will be the next sort of period of recovery. And I just want to say, if you're new and struggling, it really, really does get better. You know, I just remember saying to myself, if it doesn't get better in a year, I can go out again. So let me just try it. And, you know, once I started trying to do the suggestions, life got better. And, you know, it was that simple. It was just the real basics. And it doesn't mean every day's great. There used to be somebody who would always say, I've never had a bad day in recovery. And I just thought, you know, oh, they're talking such bollocks. I mean, and they meant something, I think, a bit different by that. I think it was a profound statement, but it was quite lost on me. All I knew was that I was not having the same experience. But if I look at it, I've lost my father in recovery. I've had operations in recovery. I've had things that have been difficult in recovery. But actually, I haven't really had a day where I've thought it would be better to be using than it has to be clean. And you know, and I'm also hugely grateful that I came in not having done things. You know, when I look back, I'm so lucky I didn't kill somebody, because I used to drive completely off my head. I drove off my head, actually, before I'd stolen a car, before I'd ever got my test, my sister's car, before I'd ever got my test, completely smacked out, and hadn't worked out where you put lights on. I'd had like some driving lessons, but we didn't do night driving, so I hadn't done lights. And I drove to a party in the country where my dealer was going so that I could score. I mean, that's how mad, how dangerous and stupid. I mean, it's amazing the things that I didn't do. I didn't kill anybody. And I feel so grateful for the things I didn't do as well, because they're all out there for me if I went out and used. So thank you very, very much. Thank you.